Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of Podcast to Be Named Later, the official podcast of OutfieldFlyRule.com. I'm Brent Blackwell, here today with Chris Jervis.
Hello.
And TJ Alexander.
Hi.
Braves are hot, baby. Three wins.
We called it, didn't we?
Three wins. That's right. If you listened to last week's podcast, you heard us wisely predict one win against the Pirates and two wins against the Phillies. That's exactly what happened.
I also said it would feel good, and it does.
And it does feel good. I feel like we haven't lost in ages.
My liver thanks you.
So, any takeaways from the past week that we want to talk about? Chase Darno's hitting a lot.
Yeah, he's hitting.
He's getting lucky.
Yes, he is. But we'll take it. I mean, luck counts.
Yep.
Scrappy little player, pretty versatile. He can play multiple positions. He's pretty aggressive on the base paths. Seems to be stroking the ball well. Snitker had good things to say about him. Apparently, Brian Snitker was actually the one who suggested to the Braves to actually consider promoting him, who has been around for a while. He made his major league debut a couple of years ago for other teams. But he's stroking the ball well right now. He's seeing it well, and you know, he's getting the job done. There's a good bit of random variance going in his favor right now, but that'll come back down, but we'll see how he plays out.
Yeah. Ride the hot streak as long as it lasts.
And then with a team like this especially.
Yeah. But the key is don't be afraid to
switch him out when that starts changing.
You gotta recognize when it's over. There's another player who, let me give a couple of sentences that are correct about this player, and then I want you to describe what you think the kind of player I'm describing would be. Give me give me a non-Braves example of a player that fits this description. Okay.
All right.
Decent power, enough to hit multiple home runs in a single game, and rank second on the team. Ineffective on the base paths. Gets caught about as much as he is successful. Doesn't get on base. And strikes out a ton.
Francoeur.
Yeah, really.
I was thinking somebody like, and not the power isn't there, but somebody like Chris Davis or something.
Yeah.
Like some guy like that mold. Like, how big do you think this person is?
Right.
Like, oh, they're 6'4", 240 pounds. What position do they play? They play first base and maybe on really bad nights, right field.
Right.
Nope.
Or they DH unless it's an NL club.
Nope. Oh, and where are they hitting the lineup?
Right.
They hit fifth.
Yeah.
Nope.
Not ninth.
Not ninth and occasionally first. Yeah. Now we're talking about Malik Smith, who had a two-homer game against the Pirates.
Don't expect that.
Wait, yeah. It's just, it's really weird. Man, it's this is not the Malik Smith we thought we'd be getting.
Yeah. Two home runs in a game. And has yet to have two stolen bases in a game.
I think the
aware of.
Three home runs in a season is surprising for him.
Yeah. Three out of the park home runs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Three that have cleared fences.
Yeah. So it's just, if you had asked me to predict his line through 113 plate appearances, I would have been way off all across the board. Well, maybe I would have gotten the strikeouts because I'd heard scouting reports.
What's his average right now?
243. I would have gotten that about 250, right.
250.
I would have said maybe 250. His on base also 282.
Tell you what.
But the 417 slugging percentage?
No way.
And also the 6-for-11 in steals.
Yeah.
Is just
awful.
Yeah, it's not good.
I think at 4.4% walk rate, he's not walking as much as he did in the minors. He's never been known to walk, but he's not even walking as much as he did there. I think if he could lay off some of the out-of-the-zone swings. I'm worried that he's trying to make contact to put the ball in play to use his speed rather than being selective with his pitches. He can still be selective and put the ball in play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if he were to stop swinging at so many pitches outside the zone, even though he makes contact with them, if he could just slightly scale back on that and raise that walk rate from 4.4% up to even 6%, 6.5%, That would suit his on-base percentage up, 20, 30 points.
That's the kind of player he needs to try to be,
yep.
too.
He
needs to be an OBP guy.
He needs to get on base first and then use that speed. Don't worry about how you get there. Just get there.
Yeah.
And I saw him twice last night. Was it yesterday or the day before? I can't remember. Balls coming in on him that were fairly well inside. He easily could have kind of jeetered his arm into the way to get hit by that pitch and get on base.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying, you know, I got throwing 95 miles an hour at me. You know, I probably don't want to take the hit either, but get on base.
Yeah.
Freddie Freeman also has been pretty good lately. He's single-handedly solved our power issue. Or at least...
Along with
nobody else,
Robin Malik Smith.
And nobody else is writing articles now about the Braves' power issues.
Yeah, we're over half as much as the team in 29th place.
Yeah.
So that's good.
On the comeback trail.
That was just bound to happen. I mean, you know, no team is as bad as the Braves were for as long as they were. I mean, eventually... Regression to the mean not only means that players that are doing really well have to come back down to earth, it also means that players that are doing really bad generally are going to come back to earth.
Right.
Also, this means, too, that we don't have to have that stupid discussion that I kept seeing about whether Daniel Castro was going to be the Braves' all-star representative.
I found an all-star representative. How about Julio Teheran? He's pretty good.
Him and Vizcaino.
Yeah. Those two have been very good this year.
Yeah, Teheran has...
Whistler's been good, too.
Yeah. Toot, toot. That's my horn.
Yeah, Teheran had another good start this week.
He's looked really good.
He's been solid across the board. He's getting strikeouts. He's locating his pitches. Mm-hmm. If I haven't seen the numbers, but I believe he's also, and this has always been a problem for Teheran, is home runs. I don't want to say problem. He gives up a lot of home runs because he gives up a lot of fly balls, but I think that's actually even down this year compared to usual.
It's less than one per nine.
Which is lower for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been... You know, he's always been around 1.2, 1 point, you know, there was a 1.8.
0.8 right now.
All right, yeah, 0.8 right now. Yeah, he had a 1.83 earlier in his career. He's always been right around 1. He's been below that now.
That's awesome. Williams Perez also had a good start this week.
He's a functional middle of the rotation to back of the rotation starter for a team like this.
Yeah.
I think his success is dependent upon a lot of smoke and mirrors. And sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. But he's actually, he had just a tremendous outing. I think it was the last time he was out.
Two starts ago.
And then
last start was also really good.
That was the good start that was in the rain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had the ball get away from. And
2 starts ago was his, like, masterpiece.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a rough one in between, I think.
Perez is a functional starter. I mean, he's not one of our higher-end prospects, and he's probably somebody that I think a couple of more good starts, and we might want to consider putting him on a block to see if somebody will bite on it.
Yeah, I'm sure he perpetually is on the trading block.
Yeah.
Then there were some not so great performances. Fultonavich had a rough start. Fultonavich is still pretty fine. Aaron Blair had just a horrible nightmare of a start. So that you have to keep that start. You have to remember that start. Now, you have to keep in mind Aaron Blair's start for the rest of the season because his ERA is going to be a reflection of that start for a long time. And his ERA is really bad, but he hasn't pitched like a guy with a 7.59 ERA. He's pitched like a guy with a high 4 ERA in general.
He just got shelled in a small sample of innings.
Couldn't build it back up. They put him back out there in the second inning, and they had 2 more hits. And
nothing was working for him. He just got destroyed. He was probably the closest to major league ready of the players that we picked up. That doesn't necessarily mean he was major league ready.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the weekend transactions. It seems like this never slows down. The Braves make a ton of transactions every single week, it seems. So going back a week, 1 week ago, we're recording this on Monday the 23rd, so a week ago, the Braves sent Shea Simmons on a rehab assignment to Gwinnett. That's a name we hadn't heard in a while.
Yeah.
I'm excited about getting Simmons back and healthy. I hope we take our time with him.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we need him to do anything important this year.
No.
So that'll be something to keep an eye on. 2 days later, the Braves sent Aaron Blair down, like you just alluded to. They called up John Gant, so Gant's back. Any thoughts on Gant?
I think he was just called up for depth. We had some guys go pretty shallow in games. We didn't have anybody. I think there was two out of three starts we had guys pitch less than 4 innings when they started. So we needed a couple of arms who were capable or who were fresh or capable of going multiple innings.
Okay.
He's coming out of the pen. Is that where we think he's going to be?
I don't know. I think they want to try and give him a shot. A lot like Fulte. You give a guy a shot at starter until he shows he doesn't belong.
Right.
Gant's not on the current 25-man, though, is he? No.
Is there another transaction at the bottom of that list where we see?
So 2 days later.
Okay.
2 days later. Yeah, I was going to say, we got more to get through. 2 days later, the Braves sent John Gant to the Gwinnett Braves, back down to Gwinnett. The Braves made 3 other moves that day. They signed free agent pitcher Lucas Harrell to a minor league contract. I don't think there's much there. Harrell was, he pitched for the Astros during the Astros' really bad years.
Bad times.
Yeah, and he was just a barely functional starter for them at the time. And, he's depth. He's a minor league guy to just throw innings. Braves also signed free agent right-handed pitcher Rob Wooten to a minor league contract. He was with Atlanta before, right?
He was released on May 9th. And I think he was released to make some room. And then Sean Burnett opted out of his contract. And when that created a vacancy, so we called Mr. Wooten back and said, about that release, are you interested in? And he came back.
Nice.
Same day, the Braves selected the contract of Joel De La Cruz from Gwinnett. He was brought up to the major leagues.
That was...
to replace Gant.
Yep. That was that situation. Because when Gant got called up, the day he got called up, I think he pitched 3 innings, maybe. Gant did. De La Cruz was called up to essentially fill that extra role of, hey, we have a tired pen, we need an extra arm. Because he didn't do anything, I don't think, while he was up.
No, 2 days later, the Braves sent De La Cruz to the Gwinnett.
And called up?
And called up Casey Kelly, but also they they moved Shea Simmons over to Rome for his rehab assignment. And they also sent Manny Benuelos on rehab to Rome. So Benuelos is on the comeback trail.
End.
That's good. But yeah, Casey Kelly came up and started a game, I guess, in Blair's spot in the rotation.
I wonder if they did that because Rome's close enough for them to be able to travel and see him and check out.
Yeah, but it's further than Gwinnett.
But Gwinnett...
could be on the road or something.
Could be on the road, or they could be profile.
I bet they were trying to keep him in the area. I bet that's probably it.
I haven't looked. Actually, Gwinnett is on the road this week, so that might have been it this past week.
Casey Kelly came up, started game. I don't know. Didn't look great.
He started 6 games in 2012 and then took 4 years off.
I can't imagine I think he was just stuck in the minors. I can't imagine
he went sailing for 4 years. He went mountain hiking for 3 years in the Andes.
Went to find himself on Everest.
Yeah.
I can't imagine we would think that he's better than Aaron Blair. So is this move all about just getting Aaron Blair more confidence or something in the minors? Because I really hope it's not.
We're not giving up on
it. It may have been one of those. Kelly was doing well through 5 starts down in AAA. It may have been all right, let's see what he can do.
I'd rather Gant start for us than Kelly.
As would I. I think Kelly ends up in the bullpen myself, but
Aaron Blair, I will say this, Aaron Blair has his strikeouts per 9 is 3.38. And if your strikeouts per 9 resembles a good ERA, you probably should be striking out more batters, especially in the era of strikeouts when average is 8.2 per 9 and Blair's not even halfway there. However, we managed to replace him with someone who makes Aaron Blair look like Nolan Ryan. And that's Casey Kelly, 1.12 strikeouts per 9 innings. I don't really know what we're doing there with those guys. But then again, I don't know.
Didn't really matter either.
Right.
That's the other thing. Is that if you want to send Blair back down just to get him out of the spotlight for a little while, if you think that helps. It might not. It might. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Poor Joel De La Cruz. Didn't even get to pitch. Bring him up. Let him do something.
He got paid like a big leaguer for a day, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to eat pretty good. All right, so...
got that jersey now.
That wraps up all the transactions. Let's see. I have to do my weekly Bud Norris bullpen checkup. See how he's doing. because
you may have called that one correctly.
It's just you always take for it's easy, and I do it too. It's, you always take for granted how much easier it is to pitch in relief. I gave up a run this week over four innings, so yeah, 2.25 ERA has drastically increased his bullpen ERA. Bullpen ERA up to 1.32.
He did have 9 Ks per 9 this week, though.
That's good.
So, there you go.
Yeah, he's his career as a reliever is taking off.
81.8% ground ball rate this week.
So, that's ridiculous.
That's stupid. I've seen bowlers not get that high a ground ball rate. That's holy moly.
I think if every player bunted, I don't know that you could get an 81% ground ball rate. That's ridiculous. Yeah. All right. Big news from last week. It happened on the day we posted last week's podcast.
Chipper Jones coming back out of retirement.
Freddy Gonzalez fired as Braves manager. Well, I think we all figured it was coming sometime before. I was positive it was coming before 2018, and that's all I knew, for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was coming before 2017 myself.
I thought there was a good chance of that, too.
I don't know why it happened now and not earlier or later. It just seemed like such a weird... that's why I wonder if there was some part of Freddie who kind of wanted... Me and Brennan talked about that a few days ago, but...
Some of the stuff that I have read seemed to indicate that Hart and Coppolella wanted to fire Freddie back when they got rid of Wren. And that Schuerholz and Cox were pretty high on Freddie and kind of made a case for... He doesn't have a good roster. He doesn't have this. You know, let's see what he can do. And that they've taken the bulk of the season so far of having to convince Schuerholz and Cox that, hey, this guy, he's not strategically sound. He's made some mistakes, some crazy lineups, some crazy bullpen choices, some crazy matchups that, you know, they eventually started working on Cox and Schuerholz to the point that they felt like they could fire him without getting any backlash.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think there was tension between any of them. I think it was just one of those things. Cox and Schuerholz were really loyal to Freddy Gonzalez. And from everything that I've read, everybody loves Freddy Gonzalez. He's very well respected and liked within the organization. They just don't think that, at least the current guys making the decisions, don't think he's a good fit for manager. And so that's why they decided to make a move.
Yeah.
So I just this morning published a article on the site that looked into Freddie's tactics and strategies over the years. And
what site is that?
Outfieldflyrule.com.
Okay.
I looked at that, and I don't know. I found that he was more a victim of bad decisions in big moments than he was regularly bad decisions. I think in a general sense, other than issuing too many intentional walks, he was generally pretty good. I don't know about the shifting. I don't know if the Braves, one of the things I found is the Braves, and this was pretty well known at this point, is the Braves have fallen behind the curve that the rest of the league is pretty much on in terms of shifting defenses. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was a Freddie thing or if that's a Braves organizational philosophy.
That may have been a Freddie thing from something that I've read elsewhere, but I can't attest to that.
But, you know, for the most part, he wasn't that bad. He's, you know, even the things that we think of him being obsessed with, he's maybe, you know, a little... There may be a tendency, there may be a trend, but it's not far from league average in most cases. And so there's a ton of just statistics that I pulled and looked up. So it's all in that article. But anyway, I think he was more a victim of really bad decision making at key moments.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and
he's not very clutch as a manager.
None of that should be taken to say when we say, "Oh, Freddie wasn't that bad." It's not necessarily support of Freddie. Freddie made some dumb decisions, and like Brent said, he made some of the dumbest ones in some of the biggest spots in games. But Freddie, for the most part, didn't make decisions that much differently than what the rest of the league does.
Right.
So replacing him with, unless you're going outside of the mold of the typical major league manager, unless you're going outside that mold, you're going to get a lot of those same decisions. So there's no reason to think beyond, you know, personality and, you know, personal motivation and things like that, that there's anything different to be expected with the same talent.
I would recommend everybody also go read, I mean, I would love if you read my article, but I would also recommend reading Micah Smith's article on the next Braves manager. So my article had more to do with Freddie, and his had more to do with the future.
What we should be looking for. And there's some pretty interesting names in there, too. One that I had considered but never really given a lot of thought to, he kind of put in a little bit more discussion for the next Braves manager. So check it out as well.
Mm-hmm. For now, we've got Brian Snitker, Braves lifer. I think the only person who's been affiliated with the organization longer is Walter, the
the dancing usher.
The usher, yeah. Yeah, so Brian Snitker, 40-year veteran of the Braves, 60-year-old, getting to manage in the big leagues for the first time. A lot of people are wondering if he's the next full-time manager. I don't think that he is. I think part of the reason part of the upside of firing Freddie early is also you preserve Freddie's record, his win-loss record a little bit, and you don't let Freddie's get worse. And I talk about this just a little bit in the article. And Freddie gets paid summer vacation, you know, to kind of recharge his batteries. Freddie gets to... He doesn't get another full season of 300 ball to add to his record.
Right.
And at the same time, you get to reward a guy like Snitker, who's been an organizational lifer, and you get to put him in a major league dugout for the bulk of a season. And maybe you extend that for a year next year or something. I don't know. But.
And even if he's only an interim, you know, the first move that he made was he called up Terry Pendleton to be his bench coach. Mm-hmm. He and Pendleton have a very, very strong relationship. Pendleton spoke about it in an interview last week that he and Snitker are very close. They would drive in from Marietta to the ballpark every day when Snitker was the third base coach. Snitker has 40 years, you know, experience in the organization. You know, he's got close to, I think, 15 years managerial experience.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's at the minor leagues, managerial experience is managerial experience. You're managing personalities. You're managing a dugout. You're managing a rotation, a bullpen. You're making game time decisions. And as a bench coach, that's all stuff that Terry Pendleton, who wants to be a manager, can pick his brain on and get to learn on. Whether that is an indication of maybe where the Braves might be looking at going in the 2017 season, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ways they could go with it. I think it'll be kind of a job that some up-and-coming managers will want to take because the Braves seem to be more on the, by 2017, on the upswing than they are at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, I think Snitker also has experience with young players too,
right,
which could bode well. Would be another example of maybe he's the guy to break the youngsters in, and then some other manager is the guy to lead them to great things. I mean, it's not unheard of.
I don't think he's the future manager for the next... if it was me, I'd be looking at who can manage my team for the next 10 years. And Snitker's 60 right now.
Yeah, no.
Getting his first major league taste. I don't think he's the manager for the next 10 years. But, you know, a Craig Counsell or a Gabe Kapler or, you know, a young player slash somebody who's been out of the game for a couple of years and has gotten their feet wet elsewhere. I prefer managerial experience, even if it's at AA.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some guys have gotten their experience elsewhere and the game is moving towards or away from giving players.
What percentage likelihood do you think Snitker is managing opening day 2017?
I think he'll be managing somewhere. Will he be the Braves manager?
Braves manager, SunTrust Park.
I put it at 35%.
That's about where I was leaning.
Odds for Snitker?
Snitker to be opening day, yeah. Maybe 30% is what I was going to say.
A little higher, but...
Yeah.
Just because I don't see a reason to... You don't want to bring anybody you want to keep long-term anytime soon, I would think.
Unless you really do have patience with a young, and you're
and
getting
see, that's
a young
the thing
guy.
Though, that they were pressured into getting to dumping Freddie now, or they wouldn't have done it now. That's in my opinion. Like, what the hell did he do this year that made them be like, see Bobby, see John, fire him now? Like, he didn't do anything different. I mean, hell, he was doing things that Coppy probably liked more this season than he has.
But I think he was never, and this is something that folks forget. Most general managers bring in their own staff. They bring in their own coaches. They bring in their own managers. Mm-hmm. Coppola and Hart didn't do that. They took over and kept with the manager that was here from the previous regime. And I think they wanted, like I said, I think they wanted to get rid of him when Wren was gone, but he had some heavyweight backers in his corner. And now both of those backers, too, are also less involved in the day-to-day operations.
That's true. Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting. And I'm by no means defending or wanted him around long, Freddy Gonzalez. I mean, but it's it had to happen sometime, I know. Yeah. But it's still weird that it happened now, especially when. Because, I mean, I know what you're saying. It's just weird. It's just odd.
It probably reached that point, too. I mean, you know, I'm not a big believer in that kind of stuff. But at some point, you have to make a change just for change's sake. You know, just to get a new spark, a new environment, a new thought process, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the success over the last week has as much to do with Brian Snitker being the new manager as it has to do with Bloops. We watched highlights of the game just before we went on the air, and how many times did we see bloops fall in that had previously been being caught, you know, things like that. So, you know, it coincided with some changes, and we also started hitting the ball past the infield dirt. That's always a good way to get runs scored, is, you know, clear the infield.
Yeah, there's a concept, and I think it's used mostly in economics, and it's in finance. It's called a dead cat bounce. If a stock declines for a long time, eventually it will bounce back, even if the stock is like dead, and the stock will always bounce back for a brief period. And it's called a dead cat bounce. Like, even if you throw a dead cat from, you know, it's a very grisly image, but the cat will bounce. But the bounce doesn't mean anything. The bounce doesn't mean you're back, and in a way, it's sort of me. That's how the hiring at the time reminded me of that, or the firing at the time reminded me of that, in that the Braves were due for a dead cat bounce.
Right,
we have been
so bad for
we've
so
been
long.
So bad.
Schedule was getting better. Players were heating up.
That's the kicker, man. Like, we talked about it every week. I feel like how bad the schedule was,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, I mean, it wasn't bad. It was awful. When we talked about it before the season started, it was just horrible.
Yeah, and it's sort of like if you drop a ball with the expectation, first off, with demand the person dropping the ball to keep the ball in the air. And then the ball, just before the ball hits the ground, you freeze time and you say, you did a terrible job. We're hiring a new guy. And the new guy comes in, doesn't even touch the ball. The ball is going to bounce back up a little bit.
Right.
And that's when we fired Freddie, was the moment the ball hit the ground. And now we've got Brian Snitker, and the ball is going back up in the air. It's, you know, the team is better now.
Back up to 3-4.
And none of that is to say Snitker's not any good. None of that is to say Snitker's not any good. None of that is to say that Snitker is not contributing to any of this.
Yeah.
The big question is, what is he doing differently? Because what I've looked at is, Brian Snitker is still playing Eric Ibar. He's still sitting Malik Smith against left-handers on a semi-regular basis. He's still playing lefty-righty matchups. He actually, during the first week that he was in control, played lefty-righty matchups more often than Freddie did, which people complained about. Mm-hmm. He had issues about pulling guys early, using different relievers in different scenarios. He's not doing much differently strategically in terms of what Freddie did. So, you know, at that point, you got to say, okay, what else was going on?
Yeah.
You know, I don't doubt that there was a change in, I don't want to say morale, because I don't think players were, nobody likes losing. So you win a couple of games and suddenly morale's better. Was it because Brian Snitker's a great happy-go-lucky guy, or was it because you won a couple of games? You know, there's a lot of factors that could go into it. But, you know, Snitker has been around the organization for as long as he has because he's well-liked.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably doing something right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying be worried about Snitker. I'm just saying don't be overjoyed with the fact that we started hitting some home runs just because a different guy was sitting in the dugout is ridiculous.
On that take, though, I will say there was an article written by Tomahawk Take last week. A questioning whether the Braves are starting to rebel a little bit against the Kevin Seitzer philosophy. Kevin Seitzer, as the hitting coach, his philosophy is basically gap to gap, line drives. Don't elevate your swing. You want to hit line drives using all sides of the field, you know, all parts of the field, but primarily gap to gap. The Braves this week, and I just took a quick look at it yesterday talking with somebody on Facebook, the Braves have been elevating their swings more. They're getting more fly balls, fewer line drives. They're pulling the ball more often. They're pulling the ball 15% more often this week than they were last week. Now, granted, it's a small sample size. We're talking about a week's worth of games.
Right.
But it seems that at least for the Kelly Johnsons and the Jeff Francoeurs and the guys who had made their bones getting the ball to the outfield have stopped doing that a little bit and have started going back to what made them successful. We have more infield pop-ups now this week than we did in the previous, you know, part of the season. I'm wondering, too, if maybe that whole just spray it everywhere and see what happens strategy that worked in Kansas City because they have a huge outfield doesn't necessarily play as well here.
I wonder if the hitting coach, the idea of a hitting coach is just flawed. Not every player is going to be the same. Not every player is going to take to the same approach. You don't want someone like, if you had like Mark McGuire on your team, you wouldn't want him just focusing on making contact all the time.
And that was one of the things mentioned in that article was in one of the post-game interviews, I think it was Francoeur, just made a casual comment of, we're getting back to doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
Which makes it seem like they were doing something that they were unaccustomed to doing before. It just seemed to me like there was at least a measurable change this week in the approach at the plate and the things that were being done than there was in previous years. And I agree. Hitting coaches generally don't make much of a difference.
I almost think they'd be better off having the hitting coach position that travels with the team and everything, have that be a scouting, someone who scouts the Braves hitters and talks to them about what he scouted, and also someone who scouts upcoming pitchers for the hitters and talks to them about that. And I'm sure that's some of what he does, but just let hitters have their own. I mean, you have a ton of money. You're an organization with a huge amount of money. You just let each hitter have its own hitting coach.
Yeah.
I mean, a private hitting instructor.
If you're treating them like offensive coordinators, this is hilarious to me. Like,
right.
Here's the deal, everybody.
This is what
we're all going oppo. Yeah. Like, no, it's not how it works.
Whereas, what the hitting coach should be doing is just serving as an extra set of eyes for what the batter has done to be successful enough to make the major leagues.
Yeah. You know what, Chipper Jones is always so good? Because his dad was his hitting coach, and he never listened to Braves hitting coaches. I mean, he would listen to them. He would interact with them. They would keep him sort of on day-to-day schedules and everything, but
it's one more person who's not having to play, who's not a millionaire, that can say things like, when they bring the new pitcher in, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, this is that guy who hammers you inside with a cutter
and
or whatever.
At the same time, Chipper Jones' dad didn't scout, you know, a bunch of other guys. He looked at Chipper Jones' swing for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knew what he was looking for. He knew what he saw. He's not looking at 5, 10, 15 other guys.
Right. Hitters should have a coach that just looks at them.
Right.
And knows.
And then if
them.
There's a hitting coach for the team, let him serve as the extra set. Let him. He's a video. He should be a glorified video coordinator, is what he should be.
That's what most coaches in baseball should be.
Mm-hmm. All right. Real quick, do you want to delve into Dan's latest topic?
Oh, sure.
So one of our authors, Dan
Horton.
Dan Horton. I was about to...
Dan!
I was I was trying to phrase the next part of the sentence. Dan Horton has been writing...
He's taking a personal journey.
Yeah, like sort of a layman's approach to different statistics. And we talked to... TJ and I talked about batting average and his batting average article a week ago. This past week, he published one on base percentage and weighted on base average. So, quickly... A little recap is, well, you know what on-base percentage is. There's no, I assume most people do. It's the frequency at which you get on base.
Right.
As
how often do you avoid making an out?
Yes, that's on-base percentage. Pretty easy. And it's the statistic that has the highest correlation of all the basic statistics. It correlates highest with run scoring, and that's what Oakland figured out in the early 2000s and Moneyball and all that, and that's when the OBP revolution took off, and now it's not really a secret. Every team values OBP. The other statistic is a little more in depth, and it's weighted on base average, which comes from valuing different events on the field according to how valuable those events normally are.
So, for example, how often a single leads to a run, or how often a home run leads to a run. With on-base percentage, a single and a home run are treated exactly the same. You drop a 13-foot bunt single, or you hit a 450-foot home run, on-base percentage treats those the same because you've got on-base. That's all it's looking at. Weighted on-base average looks at how often do those events, or how well do those events correlate to generating a run. And that 13-foot bunt single has far less of an effect in creating a run than does the big 450-foot home run.
So, playing the people who don't know what the stat is, explain the difference between slugging and WOBA then. Because what you're describing sounds a lot like slugging. So this involves walks.
Slugging is just an easier tabulation of it.
Right.
It counts...
total bases.
Here's the difference. Slugging would count a home run as being twice as good as a double.
Right.
Four total bases. And it would count a triple being three times as valuable as a single.
Mm-hmm.
So in real terms of run value, and this is the calculation of how much an event is worth. I pulled up the numbers here from FanGraphs for last year. A walk is generally worth about 0.5 runs. A hit by pitch, about the same. A single, 0.7 runs.
So a single is better than a walk, right? Obviously.
Yeah, but not a ton, but it's right. A little better. A double would be worth about one run on the board.
Cool.
So a single is...
So it's a double is only about 0.3 better than a single. Then a triple would be 1.27 runs, and a homer, 1.65 runs is the average value of a home run. So that's the problem with treating... Slugging percentage would maybe... What would that... over-inflate home runs?
Sure.
Yeah.
Triples and doubles? So they use all these run values, and they have a formula, and it's basically an all-encompassing look at a player's offensive ability at the plate, just at the plate, because technically base running is also part of offense, and that does not go into it. But it's called weighted on base average because even though it encompasses all of offense and different things you can do at the plate, they have set it on the on-base percentage scale. So they have set it to league average. So that league average is around 319?
Yes.
Yeah, 319. So if you have a weighted on-base average of 319, that means you are a league average hitter. It should mean that, right? Yeah.
Roughly.
If you're at 300, you're below average. You're about 19 points worse than league average. If you're 375, then you're much better. So right now, Freddie Freeman has a weighted on base average of 357. So he's an above average hitter, which we knew.
Yeah.
We didn't need the stat to tell us that, but it does confirm that it is doing what it intends to do.
Right.
So far this year, Gordon Beckham, 363. And then by the same token, someone like Jace Peterson is at 218.
Right.
So he's drastically worse than league average in that regard. So I wish I could... I didn't... I found a good example of a player. There's a player this season for the Oakland A's. Former Brewer, Chris Davis. Chris with a K. He has a 319 WOBA. So he's a league average hitter in that regard so far. Around league average. Davis has but he has a 487 slugging percentage. He has a pretty high slugging percentage. That's sort of an example of WOBA accounting for that difference, where slugging percentage rewards him heavily for having 12 home runs right now, but he also has a 263 on base percentage. And so he's creating a lot of outs.
So if you were to look at some of that, you'd say, I mean, he's roughly league average by one measure, league average by another measure, well below league average in a different measure. He's contributing with his ability to hit, what's his ISO? He's probably close to 185, 200 on his ISO.
It's got to be over, no, it's well over 200. It's
220?
It's almost 260.
Wow. So he's creating value by gaining more bases with each hit.
Yeah, but when TJ asked the difference between WOBA and slugging percentage, that's the difference, is that slugging percentage would make him seem better because so many of his hits are home runs.
Right. He's getting more bases per per hit.
So than slugging percentage would overvalue it compared to weighted on base.
Man, this is hell.
Because 487 is significantly above average slugging percentage. Right.
This isn't too far off topic, but it kind of goes back to something we were talking about earlier. Chase Darnay, I was just looking at WOBA leaders from 2010 to 2016 for the Braves. Chase Darnay's right now is better than any hitter you could name for the Braves. It's better than Justin Upton, Chipper Jones, Brian McCann.
Nice.
Yeah. Prado, Gattis, Hayward, anybody. You
should probably play him every day.
For now.
Why is it we play all the guys that are hot and doing well except the catcher? Sorry. Not, different topic, different
not,
day.
Not talking about it this week. I can't.
Change the managers and we still can't get a good catcher to play.
I want
to
guess things.
How far back do you want to go?
However far you want to go back, game master.
Game master. Let's go back to when things were good.
Are these Braves only?
Yeah. Let's do during the run. Why not? Let's forget all this crap since 2005.
So just the runs.
Just,
so
just 91 to 2005.
91 to 2005. What are we guessing?
Let's start with WBP. That'll be the easier of the two, I assume. Okay. Minimum plate appearances 2000. OBP leaders.
Chipper Jones.
Is it Chipper?
It is Chipper.
Yeah.
You know, guess what it is? His career OBP.
Or also OBP for that time. Well, just during that time frame. I'd say like 412.
I'd say during that time frame, because he went down afterwards, 408.
401.
Oh. Actually, probably went up afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually party. Yeah.
Yeah.
I figured 401 was right at his career.
Yeah. And 04-05 was his bad year, too. He had that year where he batted 240 or whatever.
Let's do it this way. Y'all can team up. Name top 10 without missing one. See how far you can get.
Jeez.
Top 10 OBP
without missing one. You got number one is Chipper Jones.
Brian McCann.
From 91 to 05, that only has his rookie year.
Oh,
so,
okay. I'm missing stuff then. And so, we're also talking about minimum of
2000, so he wouldn't be on the list. I know the A's traded for Justice in the Moneyball run, so I wonder if Justice's was pretty good. He drew a lot of walks.
J.D. Drew was here for a season. Teixeira was here for a season.
Galarraga. No, Teixeira's later.
Gary Sheffield.
Ooh, was he here long enough?
I don't. That's what 2,000 at bats is a good bit. That's four seasons.
Yeah. Huh.
2,000 plate appearances is going to be four. You know, three and a half, 4 seasons.
Justice has to be top 10.
Justice is number 4.
Okay.
Career OBP during that, just OBP with the Braves at 376.
Okay. Ooh. Okay. Who else would be up there?
Oh, Giles was pretty solid.
Javi Lopez is number 3. OBP at 3. I'm not ranked on this. Hold on. Yeah, Justice is number 2. Javi Lopez is number 9. 337. I'll go ahead and say, yeah. All right, yeah. Yeah, Javi Lopez is on there. 337. Number 9 on the list.
Did Kluska draw a lot of walks?
He drew some walks, but he got a lot of lefty platoon.
He also was a low batting average, too, I think.
Otis Nixon had a good couple of years with Atlanta, but I don't know if he would have gotten the requisite PAs.
I don't either. Galarraga here long enough?
He missed the whole year, but if he had the PAs, he would definitely be on there. Mark Lemke, no shortstop.
Jeff Blauser?
Rafael Furcal.
What about Jeff Blauser?
Blauser would have been on there.
Furcal, number 7. 348. Blauser, number 5, 365.
Third base was Pendleton, Castilla.
And Chipper.
Chipper.
It could be Pendleton. I don't know that he had.
Catcher was Javi.
He was really good for at least 2 years, though. Really, really good. So.
Then we had Otis Nixon. Marquise Grissom. No, he wasn't here long enough, was he? Nope.
That's what this game is turning into.
Right.
I should have said it lower. You're missing a big one, a big couple. I mean, just because if I told you how many players actually had 2,000 plate appearances for the Braves,
it's not many.
Yeah,
Fred McGriff.
Yeah,
Fred McGriff is number 3, 369.
Oh, Andrew's probably. Oh, Andrew had to be over Javi.
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew.
342.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here going, center field. Who else was in center field during that run? I'm like, oh, God, that's embarrassing.
Should be Hall of Famer, Andrew Jones.
Giles for
Call. Maybe Jones was hot enough.
Giles was.
Okay.
His batting average in Atlanta was 282.
Wow. I was thinking 280, but I just didn't. He was. His brother was really good at drawing walks, so
right.
Assumed he might be.
So if I shrink it to 1,000, Gary Sheffield is 412.
Yeah.
And is number one. You also get Galarraga thrown into the list. And Julio Franco gets thrown into the list as well. Otis Nixon, too. Otis Nixon, 351.
He got more than that because he had that's just 05. He would have over 1,000.
Yeah.
He would have more.
05 and before, he had 1,300 plate appearances. 486 wow. games.
On base machine. A lot of first pitch strikes to Julio Franco. I always laughed when a pitcher didn't throw a first pitch strike to him because he never swung on the first pitch. Except for one time he hit a home run, I think. that's fun. But yeah, keep following Dan's series of articles. I wonder what Chipper's career WOBA was.
397.
Okay. So yeah, 400 would be a fantastic career weighted on base because a 400 on base would be really fantastic.
I think his career on base was 401.
Let's see what, like, Babe Ruth or Barry Bonds. Let's do Barry Bonds.
Favorite Griffin, David Justice were the exact same for their time in Atlanta.
Barry Bonds' career WOBA was 435.
Okay.
Which is insane. Babe Ruth?
12.
197. Nope. 513. I looked at the wrong column. 513? Pretty good.
Who's this guy? Never heard of this guy.
Some fella named... He's 121 years old, according to FanGraphs.
Yeah. He's still better than Chase Darvish, probably.
What is dead may never die. Babe Ruth is of the Iron Islands. Yeah, all right. So, yeah, keep reading Dan's series. If you're more into the sabermetric statistics, it won't be as helpful, but if you're someone who just, you know, has heard about these things, has heard us talking about them, and you just sort of need a quick little introduction to them, Dan does a pretty good job with that, so check those out.
And he's doing it from the standpoint of somebody who did not like sabermetric stuff to begin with.
Yeah, right. He's making himself learn about it, which is commendable.
This is actually interesting, too. Number 8 and number 9 on this list, it's Braves since 1990. On weighted on base average.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie Freeman and Adam LaRoche are the exact same.
He is a very LaRoche-esque hitter.
Yeah.
Better batting average skills, I would think, for Freddie.
About 20 points.
And that's in an era where hits are harder to come by, too.
Right.
And LaRoche probably had a little more power in a power-friendly era.
Yeah, LaRoche slugged 512, Freeman slugged 466, and average is 281, 284.
That is interesting. Sorry, I was just looking at Babe Ruth's
stupid numbers. Yeah.
His weighted on base was 367 in his year with the Braves. When he was not that good.
It's fun to look at those. I always recommend that people just go look at some stats. Like, go look at, like, Greg Maddux walk totals for seasons. They're fun. My favorite thing is still go look at Tony Gwynn's strikeout totals just in random years. So he struck out, like, 12 times this season.
Ricky Henderson hit a home run in 25 straight seasons.
Yeah.
That's insane. Oh, we had an update. We did an update on our contest. Oh, yeah. Our preseason draft contest. We've got some win totals for our teams. TJ, the results, please.
Time out. Now we pause. Okay. We'll see. First place, 221 total wins. Goes over to Brent
Woohoo!
Blackwell. Yeah, the Cubs he had are doing good, and the Giants were his second pick. Both are leading the majors in wins, I believe. One game behind him, though, is Chris Jervis, 220. And you are, like, every team you have has 21 wins, except the Braves.
But that's changing. We just changed our manager. We're going on a run.
And I've got, I'm at 213. Yeah, 8 games behind you. Yeah, my first pick of the Dodgers is they're coming back to where they will be. They're doing better.
Yeah.
What else we got? Look at the week coming up.
Yeah, the week coming up. Let's see. We've got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of this week
against Tuesday, the Wednesday,
Brewers.
We might get some wins.
That's right. A lot of home games coming up. Julio Teherán.
Yeah, oh, well, then they're going to win.
Against Jimmy Nelson. Mike Foltynewicz against Javi Guerra. Matt Whistler against Willie Peralta.
I'll take the W in that one. What else do we have?
Yeah. We might get two out of three there. I'm gonna say 2 out of 3.
I think we can win 2 out of 3 there. The weekend set is against the Marlins, also at Turner Field. Williams Perez, the guy with two last names, going up against Adam Conley, who's been pretty good so far.
Yeah, that's not a good matchup for us. It depends on which of the plural Williamses shows up.
The Saturday game is Casey Kelly against Wei-Yin Chen.
Is not a good matchup for us.
Yeah. And then Sunday, Julio Teherán against Tom Kohler. I feel pretty good about that one.
I'm going to go three and three.
Next Monday, San Francisco comes to town. Just when we were talking about how the schedule is awesome again, the following week is all Giants and Dodgers.
Yeah. Sweet. Ride the wave while you can, Brian.
We may not be able to podcast next Monday is Memorial Day, so everybody has different plans and whatnot. So we're going to go ahead and talk about the following week, too, just in case we can't get together. We may do it later in the week, but for those of you who've actually noticed that there's a Monday or early Tuesday schedule, it probably won't be met on May 31st, June 1st. Yeah, so we got the Giants, Folty against Samardzija. But there are no good matchups when you're facing the Giants.
Yeah.
And then we go... So we have a 4-game set against the Giants next week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then we're at Los Angeles on Friday. Mm. That is a...
It's a hard
not even
set.
Not even a travel day.
We get 2 that week, I'll be pretty satisfied.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening. You can follow the podcast at...
iTunes.
On iTunes. Any other podcast app, you can join the Facebook group, Outfield Fly Rule. You can like the Facebook page, Outfield Fly Rule. You can find us on Twitter, OFR Sports.
Or Brent's house.
Yeah, just come see me. You know, bring a pizza. We'll hang out. Yeah, thanks for listening, and until next time, go Braves.
Have a good day.